You're listening to the Wait, What If podcast.
We're about to blow stuff up.
Say we were to walk out in the middle of the woods and find a 50-year-old moonshine bottle.
I think you could drink it.
I think I would drink it. You know, his mom was probably really controlling and he wet the bed as a kid.
Reminds me of a strip club, actually.
Does it really?
Yeah, this is the champagne.
Ladies and gentlemen, make sure you put the money.
I'm just going to eat this bacon and drink this whiskey.
Be prepared to expand your mind and question your reality. As always, your host, Kevin Sullivan.
That's it, man. We're live.
We're back on and outside.
Yeah. Do you hear the noises? I think it has a different sound when we do it live on the porch.
Oh, for sure.
I don't know what it is.
Oh, you guys put drapes in.
Yeah. Yeah, we put those in. Well, because the sun.
Oh, yeah, because the sun comes in there.
Yep.
Yeah, it looks great.
Thanks. PVC pipe and God, we're so... What's that? Domesticated? You just used the word drapes in a sentence.
When I said it, I was almost like, I don't even know if that's the right word.
They're draping down.
Or curtains.
The back screen.
Curtains.
So I guess that's what it would be. I would call them, I guess maybe men probably did come up with all the names of things in houses. You know what I mean? Like if you go over thousands of years, like drapes and...
I would say probably not doily though.
Probably not.
I'm going to guess we men didn't come up with doilies.
But if you think about like...
But drapes probably, yeah, to block the sun. It's very useful.
But I mean everything. Tablecloth, duvet. I still don't know exactly what a duvet is. I call it a blanket.
Oh, duvet.
I think that's what you call it.
I was thinking of something completely different. What's the... I don't know. It's real big in, I think, France. After the toilet, you sit on the other thing and it shoots.
David Hasselhoff?
You shoot the water up.
Oh, no, he's big in Germany. No,
what is that? That's not a duvet.
Maybe it is. Maybe I have the thing wrong.
No, there's a good chance I have it wrong.
I call it the ass squirter. hey, one of those fancy places was an ass squirter in there. It was freaking awesome.
Yeah, that's it. Ass squirter.
Oh, so I guess I should introduce the show. We are doing the Wait, What If podcast. With me tonight is Mike Stojic. It's back for the almost original type of show.
Yeah, these were fun because they're off the cuff.
This is all we used to do, and now I'm all, you know, having authors and real people on instead of just
More legitimate.
Joe Schmoes.
more legitimate now, I think.
Speaking of legitimization, let's start off quickly with my advertiser, Onnit.com. Do you use any supplements when you lift? Do you do much lifting?
I do some.
Yeah. As much as you want to?
No. I used to be a bit more into it.
Yeah.
I wish I need to get more regular. But I do take a few supplements when I'm after it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, are you genetically just, I don't know what the term is for it.
Well, the different body types.
Yeah, I would say.
The ectomorphs, the endomorphs.
Yeah.
So I'm, what I believe is, I know the three types.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm the.
Endo, I think, is the fat
endo
guy.
I thought endo was the skinny guy.
I thought that was meso.
Meso, I thought, was the broad shoulder, thinner.
I use the term.
I'm one of those.
I use the term stocky, but I think that means fat. But to me...
I think back in the day it wasn't barrel-chested
stocky. Yeah. Like in my mind, you can be tall and lanky. You can be short and skinny, like of slight frame, or you can be stocky. To me, stocky just means, you know, you're of stock.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's the way I looked at it, but
I don't know. I enjoy it. I need to get back after it some more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've been using Onnit T T+. So T+ is it's got long jack. It's got all this natural stuff in it that actually, with the B vitamins and everything, when you take it, you actually feel like your skin starts to itch and everything, and you actually do get a boost of energy. On it is, if you go to weightwhatif.com/on it, it's got everything. Now, this is the thing I like about On It, is that, so it's not GNC, it's none of these places. It's like lots of MMA guys go there. Like it's not for the cheesy people. It's for people that want to utilize their bodies the way they're meant to be utilized. And it gives you kind of the edge for that. And T+ is supposed to up your body's ability to make testosterone. It doesn't add testosterone, but it improves. Mm-hmm. They did a study, and I want to say, if you go on onit.com, or if you go on waitwhatif.com/onit, you got to go that route if you want to give me credit. But they have studies on there where it's a strength and conditioning coach. It's at a college. I want to say it's like University of Texas or maybe San Antonio or maybe, I don't know. But if you look, they have all this, and it's a double blind study that they did, and they actually had 36% increase in strength on their power lifters. That's what it is. It was the powerlifting team. Hmm. So they have evidence that this stuff works. It's decent. They also have things like hemp protein and...
Sure.
Have you ever heard... What I was thinking about, we were just talking about this earlier, where I kind of blew out my neck, and then last week I blew out my back, and 2 weeks before that I blew out my back, and my spine, I'm pretty sure, is just shaped like a question mark. Who said that? That was Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
But I think I'd have to give up on my quest was to deadlift 400. If I keep gimping myself, I'm not going to be healthy. B, I'm not going to make it. So. I'm thinking I'm just going to start scaling down on my lifting. Mm-hmm. I maxed 270 the other day, bench pressing. And I mean, I don't know what's the goal for that. I might just back it off and just start benching 185 and just sticking with that and not hurting myself. Deadlift 185.
I don't know.
I mean, there's no reason, right? What's the reason to try to, I mean, except for a goal.
I mean, I used to be big into that. And you're right. Now I'm getting older. I can't do it anyway because my hips and back are shot, so I can't do much in the way of deadlifting or squatting anymore. But I still like to go out there and get myself a good routine. There's a routine that I do now that I got from, I can't remember the guy's name. Otherwise, I would have looked him up. He's a big time bodybuilder.
Mm-hmm.
He does
Tony Atlas.
No, definitely not. where he does his first set. 18 reps.
Mm-hmm.
Does a second set somewhere between 12 and 14.
I remember you were telling me this.
He does his third set between 8 and 10. And then he does his... Wait, how many sets is that? So fourth
you're
set.
You're in your third, yeah.
So at his fourth set, he'll do anywhere between 1 and 3. But it's a true 1 to 3 rep max.
Okay.
And then as soon as you're done there, you start stripping the weights off and you're doing basically drop sets.
And then
you're getting a nice endurance workout with muscular endurance. And then towards the end, you're getting some good strength training endurance. And I found when I was doing it regularly... I saw results. I saw the results I liked. I mean, I wasn't trying to be a bodybuilder, but I also wasn't trying to do any sort of major strength training.
Yeah.
But I got some nice results because the muscular endurance got my heart rate up.
Yeah.
And then the heavy stuff just kind of made me feel pretty good again.
Yeah.
Not lifting heavy.
Yeah.
3 rep max.
I think there's also like when you're an athlete, no matter what age you are, you always want to challenge yourself. So settling is kind of, you're not hardwired for, at least I'm not.
No, me neither.
So I want to, like if I just said, all right, I have no goal, I'm just going to go out and, you know, do low weights, high reps and whatever, not hurt myself. Deep down inside, I'd be like, you know what, I bet you can do a little bit more.
You got to do more. And I think that's why this routine works pretty good because you'll hit the heavier, well, when I say 8, you strive for 18. That's kind of like your warm-up, right? And you get 18. You don't go any more and you don't do any less. The 12 to 14,
mm-hmm.
like you're putting on a weight that you legitimately can only do somewhere between 12 and 14 times.
Right.
And if you can do it more than 14, then you up the weight. Right? Okay.
So it's like a pyramid. It's like a upside-down pyramid.
It is, more or less. But you up the weight. Now, the 18, you leave at... the weight, like that's your intro weight, and for bench pressing for me it's 135. I can do it more than 18 times, but that's just it. And then I go down and then I find a weight that I can do in between 12 and 14, and if the 14 comes too easy or I'm, you know, hits maybe 16, like stop, and then the next time add more weight to it. So you're getting stronger and also more endurance, muscular endurance, and more muscular. And then you find a weight that you can do in between 8 and 10. Mm-hmm. And you just slowly increase it. So if you're doing 10 and it's easy, well, next time just increase the weight on that on those sets. And then the 1 to 3, you're doing 1 to 3. But then you're stripping it down. And by the time you strip all the way back down to your starter weight that you did 18 times, mm-hmm. for me it's 135, man, I'm lucky if I can do it 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
You just, it's the muscular endurance you're trying to build. And you're like pushing and you're like, God, I'm like 130. Come on, man. Like,
what time are you going? Well, how much time between set? Like, if you need your 18 and then you step down, are you
getting? Yeah, you just when it feels good. Yeah. I mean, there's guys who say so many seconds or there's so many minutes, and I used to do that, but now
there
I'm
is
like,
some.
There is, and you know, everyone's different. And then
some people are down to a science. They're like, no more than 20.
Yeah, I think it's dumb, man. I'm like, hey, listen to your body.
Yeah.
And when it feels, when you're like, yeah, all right, I feel pretty good. Like, don't sit around and talk to people because that's stupid. But if you're like, you're sitting on the bench or whatever, and you listen in your muscles, you're like, you know, I feel pretty good. Just do it. It doesn't matter if it's 20 seconds or a minute. When you'll know when it feels good. And after, the more you do it, the more you begin to really focus on what your body's telling you.
I've always been, and I might go back to it. What do you think about functional exercises?
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
kettlebells and
I like
sandbags.
It.
Yeah,
I mean, if you do it right and you maintain proper form, we talked about this a long time ago.
We when did
in earlier episodes.
I don't remember what we talked about. Man,
I know, somehow we ended up talking about how CrossFit's silly. But I mean, if you do it and you're doing your functional fitness exercises properly, then there's a lot of benefit to it because it's a multi-joint.
Sure. When you see a CrossFitter, like a legit CrossFitter, they're ripped. It's some good exercise. I mean, it gets you. But
any exercise can kind of cut you, shred you. You know, I mean, all those guys are also eating properly too.
Yeah,
that's the other thing. Like, you lift like a CrossFitter, but you still eat like the fat kid.
Yeah.
You're going to look like a fat kid. You're not going to get shredded.
What I like about it is, I think it's how our bodies are meant to be used. Like kettlebells. I fell in love with kettlebells a few years ago. I think when I was doing MMA, and just the fact that like if you're doing a kettlebell clean or a kettlebell snatch, it just feels so natural. Like when you got the bar kind of holds your hand in a certain position. You can't, you know, your hands can't kind of turn in at 45 degrees, but with a kettlebell, you pick up and it just, wherever it hangs is where it's hanging. I mean, you obviously don't do a snatch with your palm facing up or anything, but I mean, for the most part, your body goes into a natural position. And I don't think, I mean, if you're talking about, like, if someone was going to bodybuild and go compete, that's not going to get them there. I mean, it's just not, because you're not isolating the muscles that you need. But as far as someone like me, who I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do athletically as I reach 40, I might just go back to it, because I never got hurt, not once, doing like functional exercises, burpees, snatches, cleans with a kettlebell, swings, pull-ups. I mean, there's so many. You can sit-throughs. Ever do sit-throughs? It's an old wrestling thing.
I used to wrestle. So
you go from like the plank position up on your hands, and then...
Oh, you kick your feet forward?
Yeah, you slide one foot through between your one foot and I don't know.
I think I know what you mean.
They suck, but I mean,
it's been a long time.
I'm not gonna. Yeah. So yeah, that's my ad for Onnit. they got some cool kettlebells that are like, they're honestly works
like
of art.
Faces.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like gremlins and monsters.
They're awesome. I can't afford them.
Yeah, I know.
They're like $160 bucks, but you get 10% off if you buy through.
Okay, I mean, it's probably still pretty expensive. Yeah,
there's a mace. You ever heard of mace?
Yep.
So it looks like, I mean, to
like
me,
a hammer.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this one, it's like a cannonball with a metal pipe at the end of it, and you
swing it around.
Yeah, you swing it around. I mean, you got to know what you're doing. You're going to put a hole in your wall or your neighbor. But they have one that is like, you ever see the picture of like, it's one face and then the next face is half of the other face and then the next face. So it's like a big circle with all these half faces that make a full face.
Yes.
Yeah, it's called, I don't remember what it's called, but it looks really sweet. It's got like a big hickory handle on it. You can buy that there. There's all sorts of stuff. And there's workouts. And
yeah, they got some really... I've checked out their website.
Yeah.
I've seen it. They got some really great stuff. But you're right. I mean, I guess you got to want it pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah. So that's my Onnit. We talked about working out. Yeah. So what else? What else is new?
Man, I've just been really busy. I don't even know where to start.
You're doing, you're getting your bar together, right?
Yeah, and that's moving in a very nice direction. I'm about to start. Man, just me and you, I guess. I forgot we were recording.
Yeah.
But I am about to start.
Are you kind of like limited on what you can talk about?
No, I can talk pretty much openly on anything. But I was going to say, for my show, I'm going to start doing segments about, and I'm going to do 5-minute segments on where I'm at in the bar build.
Okay.
And talk about some of the struggles and learning, lessons learned, learning lessons, but yeah. Some of the lessons learned, the struggles, what goes well, what doesn't go well, things I might've forgot about, dealing with contractors, lease agreements, operational agreements, a lot of stuff that, I didn't know a year ago when I set out to open this bar, but I know now. And then kind of now I got tangible things. So it's the whole planning process. And now things are in motion, and I have a building, so working with the landlord, getting him to do the upfit, and him paying for it, and then lease, you know, negotiating leases and all this sort of stuff. You know, a lot of the stuff that's not fun at all, but it's very necessary if you want to actually grow a bar, which I'm still trying to do. So, but you figure I'll make these little segments and really talk about the process. And in each episode that I do, I'll put a little 5-minute segment of where I'm at.
You should write a book.
Yeah.
You really should.
If I become successful, maybe I will. But there's a lot out there. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of big bar consultants who write their own books. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think the line between people who can be, well, people who are successful and people who are failures is how much you can stomach.
Yeah, I agree. It's all risk, you know?
Yeah.
So no matter what you do, and as much as you try to mitigate risk, there's always risk there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people get very nervous and it makes them very sick.
Sure.
You start tossing out numbers and talking about how your life is going to change if you do this and really considering it. That's a lot of risk, and stomaching it is, I think that's what it takes.
And people play out things in their heads too. And that can kill you. I mean, it really can. Cause you know, I think of things, and we have rental property. I mean, that's not really a business, but I mean, it can be in some way. And, my wife doesn't stomach the amount of risk that I can stomach. And, you know, and it's also if your ability to overcome adversity, I think your training in the Marine Corps is really going to pay off there.
I think so.
I mean, it has to, versus someone who went to business school and has, you know, I mean, maybe they have a background in working in business or something. I don't know. But I mean, you need to have that, you know, because there's setbacks and there's also,
you have to have some level of fortitude where you're able to, and belief in yourself, confidence. Mm-hmm. Confidence, but not cockiness. Very fine line. But I'm extremely confident in how this bar is going to do. It's in the area that we're building it. So sometimes I probably sound too cocky, but I'm the work that I've done with the city and just networking, I'm like, man, I think this is going to be a very nice thing.
That's not really cocky. That's believing in your product.
Right.
That's what you got to do.
It is. But some people don't. They don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, they think you're just a kid. You know. Because I'm 30, what am I, 34, so like, 34, what the fuck, what
34,
is he
34, 35,
I'm like, yeah, man, I'm 34, but I've probably done more than, you know what it's like, man, being in the military.
You
do quite a bit when you hit your deployment. So,
sure.
And the things that you're responsible for. So to me, I look at this and I'm like, I've been responsible for more in years ago. Mm-hmm. this seems like it shouldn't be.
Hey, were you a company commander or battalion?
I was
commander?
Company.
No, it's battalion. Yeah. Is that major?
That's colonel.
Colonel.
Lieutenant. Lieutenant colonel.
Okay.
Is a battalion commander. I was a captain, so I was a company commander. I still had like 140, 150 guys. You know, I was, and then I was a combat engineer, so all the equipment that I had was like millions of dollars in equipment.
That's management. It's better than any management school, I would think. I mean,
I think so.
Yeah, you're not talking about, I mean, obviously business school, it's business ethics and all that other stuff that I don't even know about. But as far as management, I mean, it doesn't get better than that. It can't, especially under situations where, like, I think it fell in the cup.
Okay.
Mike's smoking a cigar right now. What kind of cigar is that?
Oh, so now we're going to, this is a Dominican. Mm-hmm. It's not a brand that's in the U.S. I just got back from my trip.
That's right. Let's talk about that. But okay. Go ahead. Keep going on your thing.
I met the family who makes these cigars.
Those exact ones.
This
nice.
One right here. I was going to bring them all over, but you don't really smoke cigars.
Yeah, I don't smoke cigars. I used to, but
now
I'm a PA and I...
Yeah, you're all messed up because you're up here.
I'm like, yeah, I see all my COPD people and I'm like, yeah.
I don't smoke them all the time, but I do really enjoy them every now and again. And so this one is straight from the Dominican Republic. I know the family. I met them.
Yeah.
And they're really good people. And they took us on a tour of their tobacco farms and then their factory where they do all the cigars. And they have multiple factories, and they have a family brand,
mm-hmm.
But they also make cigars for like all the other major brands. Because you know, when it's kind of like anything else, when you get really big,
yeah,
you have to almost outsource yourself to small, like Tyson's Chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's Tyson's Chicken, but they also have local farmers who raise the chickens for them, right?
Okay.
So it's like a family farm who's raising all these chickens and then give.
Oh yeah, sure. I've heard of that. Sense? Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so
McDonald's does it too, right? Don't they have? Individual farm? Do they have McFarms?
They have McFarms.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I don't know.
I thought like McDonald's gets their meat. You sign a contract, and then now you're in charge of doing the. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Could be. I don't know. But these guys make their family brand,
mm-hmm.
and they also make brands. They also make the cigars for other brands.
Okay.
And so all these other brands have proprietary blends where they blend different types of tobacco leaves together to create their unique flavor. And, you know, they blend it to their specifications and then they put the wrapper on it. And then now you have a Cohiba, but it comes from his cigar, his little factory, all handmade. So he's making them for all. So you probably never heard of Santa Ana.
Mm-hmm.
Probably most haven't because it's a smaller family company, but he's also making cigars for all the major brands like Cohibas and, not Arturo Fuente. They have a big place down there, but like Romeo and Juliet. Punch some of the larger brand name cigars. Mm-hmm. They're also making those cigars. So it's really interesting. I may get involved in this too.
Really? In cigars. Oh wait, so like you were down there thinking, get like a direct import.
Well, yeah, there's already a guy here in Clayton doing it.
Yeah.
His name's Paul Black and he has Grayson Cigars.
Okay.
And he's in three different businesses in Clayton. And he met the same family that I met. Okay, so the way we went on it was if you're familiar with Rotary International, the world's largest volunteer organization, not a Christian, no religion affiliation, mm-hmm. although some of them do pray and stuff, but
yeah.
Really it's all about helping people. It's about being a gift to the world, is what they say. So I went with them to the Dominican Republic to do a trip. To do build latrines for these extremely impoverished villages and all this other, we built homes and these sorts of things for like four days. And then we have a day to kind of explore.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I decided to go to the tobacco farm because one of the Rotarians in the Dominican Republic, that's his family's business.
Okay.
So he's a Rotarian and I'm a Rotarian.
How old was the farm?
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea.
I mean,
it's been in his family for forever, and he's 60-something.
Does everyone smoke cigars down there? Is it just everywhere? No?
I didn't really notice it until I went to the tobacco factory, and then mm-hmm. everyone hand-rolling cigars, mm-hmm. and everyone wrapping them, and was smoking a cigar while they were doing it.
Were they really?
Yeah,
wow.
It was insane. And then we're drinking coffee and smoking cigars with them. You know?
Yeah. Like, while they're working. That's been kind of cool. That's so different than...
Oh, my God. It was insane.
So yeah. Different than America. Everyone's so coddled that, like... You'd be offended. They'd make a rule or something. They'd make a law. And it probably is a law. I think there is a law. You can't smoke in a workplace or some crap like that.
Probably, but these guys are a tobacco farm. Well, it's all open air, and it's like in a crazy-looking warehouse thing. It doesn't look anything like a U.S. warehouse. But
did you see any damage from the earthquake? The Haiti earthquake, but Haiti's part of... I mean, Dominican Republic is like one island.
Yeah. One island, two countries, Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Mm-hmm.
And Haiti, man, didn't they lose like a million people or something? It was nasty.
I don't know. I don't really remember much.
I just remember people donated to the Red Cross or some company and the money wasn't getting there.
Oh, really? I have no idea.
I don't know.
I'm not even entirely sure when that was. Because this project is completely unrelated to whatever that earthquake project was.
Okay. I just want to know if you saw like any of the damage or anything like that.
I don't think so.
I've met a lot of Dominicans. They're... big baseball fans.
Yeah.
They really love their baseball. I had a friend that he said when he grew up, he he played baseball using, they made their own mitts out of like cereal boxes and whatever they could do. Yeah. And that's how they would play. And that's all they played all day long.
I believe it. You know, there's the income gap, you know, is huge. You're either like extremely wealthy or you're
really
dirt. Yeah. It's pretty incredible. There's nothing in the middle.
It makes you think about like how, you know, living in America and living in the middle class, how anywhere else in probably the majority of the world, we're like freaking living on the high hog, right?
Oh yeah. If we went with the money you're making, and I think we're all kind of middle, upper middle, probably in this neighborhood. Yeah, you'd be a king in the Dominican Republic.
Isn't that crazy?
They have 24/7. Well, okay. The family that I stayed with, because they're all Rotarians, the Dominican Republic Rotary. So we stayed with them in their houses.
Mm-hmm.
They had live-in maids 24/7. And then I was talking to them, like, how much do you pay them? And like, we pay them $175 American dollars a month.
Are you shitting me?
I'm not lying to you. I'm like, are you kidding? I'm like, shoot, man, that's like almost a cell phone bill. So
yeah.
I'm like, I would gladly pay someone $175
just
a month
to live it, take care of you.
Cook all the meals, do all the cleaning.
Wow.
Take and their family dynamic is interesting. So like, well, I shouldn't say this for everyone, but what I've noticed was the maid raises the kids, you know?
Yeah. It's old school. It's like what it used to be.
I guess it is, yeah. So it's I'll tell you, man, it was insane. I mean, I was in a mansion,
yeah,
right, during the evening when we'd go back to work.
Your phone is screaming at my thing here. There you go.
I'm like, the thing is, let me put this back here. Maybe my body will buffer it. But so we go into these inner cities.
Yeah.
Which look like some, you know, it reminded me a lot of Iraq after that was like bombed out.
Really?
That's what it looked like. Yeah, it was crazy.
So there was like,
I was like, shit,
stuff was falling apart.
Oh yeah, it was insane.
Really?
It was just trashed. It was really sad to see. We repaired one house, and it was four walls and then a roof that was like all falling apart and caving in, and it was like a tin roof and it was all rusted out. So like there was no like, I mean, it's raining through your roof.
Yeah.
And we went through and like tore the whole roof down, tore all the rafters down, and rebuilt a brand new roof for this lady.
I think I saw pictures of that.
I did. I posted some on Facebook.
Yeah. They can see it on your listeners can see it on your Facebook.
On my personal one, yeah.
Oh yeah. Do you want to know?
Or on the
they probably have to be your friend, right?
Actually, I had to open those up to everybody to see, but because I shared it on our local Rotary page.
Oh, so just the Rotary page. What's that?
Clayton Midday Rotary.
I guess just Google that.
Yeah.
Clayton, North Carolina Midday Rotary.
Yeah, because there's also a Clayton. There's two Rotary clubs in Clayton, and we're the Midday Club.
Okay.
Because we meet in the midday. Noon.
That makes sense.
And then the morning clubs meets in the morning.
Okay. So, when does the evening club meet?
Well, you don't have one. So
Wednesdays at 10 a.m. They're all messed up.
Yeah, they're all just out of control. I don't know. It's just something. You know, I'll tell you, man, I just wanted something to do.
Yeah.
After you get out of the Marine Corps, you feel like your life has got not a lot of purpose left to it. Well, I shouldn't say that. I felt like I needed something more in my life after leaving the Marine Corps. I just wanted to, I don't know, give something back.
Yeah. Well, it also, I mean, it's important because I always wish that people, and we're humans, so remember when Garrison said during the interview, he said, when he took off from Vietnam, he was thinking everything else from here on is gravy.
Yeah.
And he's like, I still get spun up on things. He's like, I'm a human, and that's the thing. But when I, you know, if you just appreciate what you have, and if you take a second to appreciate what you have, everything is gravy. I mean, I wake up in my house, I have, it's climate controlled. I go downstairs, I have filtered water coming out of a lot of people have the water thing on your refrigerator. I know. But the idea of you go somewhere else in the world and you're like, yeah, I got this box in my house that I press a button and ice comes out. I press another button and filtered cold water comes out, and I take it for granted every day.
It's amazing because the houses that we were in, they didn't have running water.
Ah, crazy,
it was
huh?
literally a concrete slab, and some of them didn't even have concrete slabs. It was like a dirt floor, and then it was cinder block wall up to about maybe where your chest is.
Yeah,
and then they used wood to go up the rest of the wall. And
okay,
then they made this I'm not kidding, man. It looked like something I would have made when I was 8 years old trying to build a fort in my backyard.
These people live there.
Yeah, shit, they live in there. And they didn't. Most houses, like virtually no house had running water. And then a few houses actually had electricity. And that's because somehow they were able to climb up a pole, splice into the wire,
yeah,
and then run a wire into their house. And there's like a light bulb and then an outlet.
Isn't that amazing? What?
Out of control, man.
How do you think that happens that you have like, I mean, just take North Carolina and just take that as your sample and how you have, there's poverty. You go out in the mountains, there's probably people without running water, without toilets. There's actually, I don't remember where I saw it, Twitter or something, that there's some percentage of the U.S. and it was pretty high. It was like 17% or maybe less than that, 10% that still don't have toilets in their houses.
I believe it.
Yeah. And
funny. Oh, sorry.
But like, why here do we have it figured out? You know what I mean? Why America, which isn't that old of a country, we've got it figured out, but you go 90 miles south of Florida and they haven't got it figured out, or wherever. Where's Dominican? That's more,
it's an hour. Is it near Cuba? It's near Puerto Rico.
Okay.
I think it's closer to Puerto Rico than it is to Cuba.
In but my brain, they're all like just in the Caribbean.
It's somewhere down there, but it's an hour outside of our time zone.
Okay. So back or forward?
Shoot. Where was I? Back. I might have been back. I think they were ahead of us. I'm sorry.
Okay.
1 hour ahead of us.
That makes sense because like Bermuda and all those islands, yeah, they're further out in the Atlantic. But
I think so.
So, I mean, still not that far away. And
I don't know, man. It's so crazy.
Why does that happen? Or Africa, where the bed of civilization, I mean, obviously the cradle of civilization, they say, is the Middle East, but pretty much everybody came from Africa.
Right.
So you're talking 150,000 years, and there's a Vice documentary. If you haven't checked out Vice on HBO, it's really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, they're obviously extremely liberal and everything. And if you put your politics aside and you can just watch really good filming, really good. I mean, this is like immersion news, like what do they call that? Embedded. But these guys just go in, and I really respect them because they go into the dangerous places and it's not fake. You know, like,
yeah,
there's a hurricane and someone will stand in front of a tree that's blowing and they're like, I'm hearing a hurricane. And really, they're like 10 feet away from a,
that's right.
These people really go deep into it. And they were looking up these guys, that were, generals and fighters in one of the wars that go on down there. And the city was just shit. Just everyone's got AK-47s and rocket launchers and machetes and hammers. And there was a beach and they called it Shit Beach because people would just go out there and drop their pants and shit. And it was horrible. And there's kids. And you think, like, what is it that they missed? What is it that little city missed that, say, you know, downtown Clayton figured out?
I'm going to assume it's education.
Yeah,
I think it has a lot to do with education, and I think the people are just extremely ignorant, and they don't appreciate, in the case of Shit Beach, sanitation.
Yeah,
because they just don't have that knowledge. So I think, and that's one I know it is in the Dominican. At least what I saw in the inner city was they're putting a huge effort in the school systems.
Okay,
and they're doing everything they can for their children to go to these schools. And a lot of them are beginning to be Duolingo? No, not Duolingo. What's the right word for that?
Bilingual?
Bilingual. Okay. I'm thinking of Duolingo, the app.
Oh.
Have you ever heard of that?
No, I haven't.
It's how you learn language for free.
Really?
Yeah, it's a great app, man. There's Spanish and Italian. Whatever.
I got one on my thing, and I did it for like 10 minutes. I've never gone back to it.
Duolingo's a really good one. There's a little owl, cartoon owl, who helps you along. That's really great.
I might have that one.
But they're pushing education, right? Because they know that the children are really the future. Like Michael Jackson said,
I believe
the children are the future.
I think it was someone else.
I'm going to say Michael Jackson.
No, I had Speak Tribe.
Try Duolingo.
Speak
Duolingo.
Okay.
But so they send them to these, they're really pushing hard for schools, mm-hmm, right? Because they know that if they send them to schools and educate them, then that's going to lift the whole community.
Sure.
It's going to take time to do it. It may take like a generation or two to do it. But if you begin educating the kids, the children, over time, it will elevate the whole community.
maybe it comes down to, like, and this isn't speaking Dominican, but going back to Africa, tribal cultures versus an established nation. Because all those nations that are down there, it was like World War One. We just went in, we're like, boom, boom, boom. All right, you're this country, you're this country, you're this country. But prior to that, I mean, besides like Egypt and stuff, people were just tribal, right?
And the Spanish, speaking for the, just about what I know about the Dominican, mm-hmm. there were native Indians
okay.
living there. And then Christopher Columbus is like their hero.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he came.
It's the opposite of what they say here, right? Everyone, they're like, oh, screw Christopher Columbus. He's an asshole.
Man, I don't, but they, he is like, they're here. He went there, settled mm-hmm. in the Dominican Republic. And then I think the Dutch hit Haiti. I'm not entirely sure.
Don't they speak French in Haiti? Haiti?
I don't know. Maybe it's maybe I'm having my Haiti's all messed up. I don't know that background, but I learned a little bit about the Dominican Republic, and I know Christopher Columbus went there and settled. So, I mean, that's kind of like the United States. We were settled by all kinds of countries, like the Spanish settled here as well.
Yeah,
Florida, down St. Augustine,
so. And out in California too, right? Didn't they?
They went that direction. I don't know.
I think so. Maybe they went down into Mexico and then up. I don't know.
I don't know.
Ponce de Leon? No, I think that's French.
Well, he definitely, Ponce de Leon went to Florida.
Really?
Sure. Well, there's a place called De Leon Springs, and then there's Ponce de Leon something. I don't know.
Grab over here. Maybe what it is we were settled by, and I didn't mean to step on what you were talking about down there, but we were settled by Europeans who were very nationalistic, and they knew about centralized government. And when we were established, rather than have little sects and tribes of people that were trying to claim their areas, we put states together, we put government together, and government set up things like, so I guess it comes to government. You know, if you have a government that is legit, not like a lot of these governments in Africa where you have warlords that are just trying to steal money and fight for power, that put their money under a constitution, put their money in certain programs.
But you can't have a government without education. Like, people have got to appreciate rights, and they have to have the ability to draft a constitution.
Yeah.
And to abide by it, in order to form a government or to form a nation, there has to be some education. You can't just do it.
Did you know, I read this recently, maybe it was in the Washington Post, but if you take, so we have 2 million people incarcerated, and like 50% of them are black, which is only 13% of the population are black in the United States. So you try to figure out why that is. If you take into account two-parent families. So now you say, let's look at two-parent families and let's look at high school education. When you look at those factors, it levels out as far as population. So the chance of a black person and a white person winding up in prison, if they both come from the same family and that family has two parents and that person, both those people graduate from high school, they have the equal amount of chance of going to prison. Take those same two guys, remember, one white, one black, now they're both part of a one family household, one parent household, and they don't graduate from high school, they have the same chance of winding up in prison. It's crazy.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think there goes the education thing again.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's important. Education is important. I don't know what the two family, maybe it's security, maybe it's money. If you have a two-parent family, you have more money.
Stability, too.
Stability, yeah.
Yeah, there's maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. It's interesting. Have you ever read anything by the Freakonomics?
No, those you keep guys? Telling me to do that. I should. You,
those guys are freaking awesome. They have a great podcast, too.
Yeah. Hold on 1 second. Yeah, so what was something unexpected down there that you ran into?
I've been asked that before, and my answer is not a good one, but I'm going to say nothing, because I did everything I could to go with absolutely zero expectations.
Okay.
And just kind of let it happen, mm-hmm. kind of experience it, and then get to work, because we were there to work.
Yeah.
And then when the work was done, we had a chance to go play, which was really awesome. But So what did I not expect, or what did I expect? I don't know. I really tried not to have any expectations, because some of the guys who have gone prior on the same trip a year or two ago, they said, hey man, leave all your expectations at home and just go and experience it. Because if you expect things, then they may cloud your judgment or whatever. So I did everything I could to not expect anything.
Anything like surprise you? You were like, wow, I didn't see that
coming. I guess how bad it really was.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It goes back to taking things for granted. You know, you're like, oh, everybody has running water and water from a filter out of your refrigerator.
Yeah.
And then it's like, shit, man, there's houses that are literally four walls and maybe a concrete slab, no running water. So that when they have to, you know, use the restroom, there's like a latrine that's actually a hole in the ground.
Yeah.
You know, and then when they want to like wash, they have to, I don't know how they do it. I guess they go to a river.
Yeah, you would have to.
But it's like, it really reminded me of when I was 8 years old and I took a bunch of my dad's scrap wood and I went off into the woods and I built a fort.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it was.
Well, it's funny. Hollywood like tries to show us the apocalypse, and they make movies that seem like, oh, what would you do if all the infrastructure shut down? And they make it seem like it's science fiction, you know, but it exists.
It's actually happening right now.
I know. The apocalypse is around. It really is.
And they'll be the ones that survive it when it actually happens. The rest of us,
because they know what we're doing. I was thinking about that. Like, let's say where we live right now, middle America, which, well, I mean, East Coast America, but you know what I mean? Just like average American town. You shut off just electricity, just boom, no more electricity. Chaos.
I know it.
It would be, you would have to be armed, because it would be chaos. At first, people would be like, yeah, let's work together. But the second someone's confronted with, my family's dying, you know, they can't eat, that's when shit gets real.
Yeah.
And I think that's when you're going to get bands of people, or people with guns, or someone coming to your house.
It's going to be Mad Max, man.
I know. I know. That was a great movie, wasn't it?
It was an amazing movie.
They won a bunch of Oscars.
Good for them. They deserve it. That was awesome.
I watched it the other night just for shits and giggles, because I hadn't seen it since that time we watched it. And I was like, this movie rules.
I know. I actually went back and watched it again, too.
Yeah. It's really good. Have you seen Revenant yet?
No.
The listeners are going to be, I talk about this every show, but it's really good. You want to talk about living in a shack? Well, he doesn't live in a shack, but
he finally did it. DiCaprio finally. Isn't that what he won his Oscar for?
Best actor or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was watching that, and I was like, I could care less. I could care less, because, not care less. Like, it was a great movie, and I love to be entertained, and that's why I like movies. I like to be entertained, and that's what they do. But the level that we put these people on, like, oh, Leo.
Yeah.
It's like, who gives a shit? The guy can make believe, you know?
I'm with you, man. I was more or less making a joke that he finally did.
Yeah, yeah. No, I wasn't shitting on you. But yeah, I kind of was, but...
But it's all good. I don't really care. I mean, I'm with you. I go, it's the same way I feel about professional athletes.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, you play ball well. Like,
yeah.
Super, and I enjoy watching, but you know better than anyone else, man. I'm like, what about the guy who's the scientist who's curing disease?
Yeah.
The doctors who are doing incredible things, or I don't know, man.
Or how about the guy that's that like...
just teaching your kids to be better people. Like, come on, man.
A guy that wakes up at 6 a.m., 5:30 a.m., and he builds... decks or whatever from scratch, you know, and he's got all the equipment, all the know-how. Yep. And then you're like, all right, what do you do?
Well, I take this ball and I put it in a hole, and every time I put it in a hole, I get 2 points. And if I throw it from a hole, so if I throw it from far away and I get it in the hole, I get 3 points.
You're like, uh-huh, right? And why are you famous again?
That's it. We love competition. We just like rooting for something.
Yeah.
It's hard to root for a deck builder.
Where would that be genetically?
What do you mean?
Why do you think our ancestors, like, why do we like to compete? Do you think
it's aggression?
I mean,
it goes, I think, all the way back to, the Olympics. What was it? The Greeks invented the Olympics, right?
Yeah.
They wanted sport, and then the Romans had the gladiators.
You would think, though.
There's always been some sport to try to better somebody, and then you've, if you can't do it, then you root for the guy who can do it.
Yeah.
And then it's just,
but where like evolutionarily, if that's even a word, would that fit in?
You can
sometimes figure things out. Like they say babies smell good and you want to smell their heads, which I don't know if you ever smelled a baby.
No, I don't ever want to.
Oh no, babies smell, not like fresh born babies. You got to get like a couple weeks in there.
Ah, gross. No.
You've never smelled a baby?
I don't like babies. I don't like children. I believe that there are a future, but I don't want one, so I'm never going to smell one.
No, I'm telling you, not the diapers. Babies and smells smell really good, and they say they smell good, and they have the big eyes, and they you know, like a puppy, you know, big eyes, and they're cute. That's so we don't eat them. Evolutionarily, they're like, you know, like when it comes down to we got a bad winter and I need to eat, and you're looking at this little thing, you're like, well, those knees look pretty tasty.
But it's too cute, so
so that's where it triggers, and that's where this like this cute thing and bringing them up close and smelling them, being like, ah, I don't want to eat this.
It might have something to do with hold on, let me make sure I don't mess this up. Not Pavlov, Maslow. Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So once you've got the basics figured out, water, shelter, food, you kind of grow from there.
And yeah.
Probably competitions in there.
Adrenaline.
Yeah. And then, you know, the arts, fine arts are like way at the top because you've evolved past everything else.
Yeah.
And now you appreciate the fine arts. But somewhere below that, I think, is probably like just competition. Where you've already reached, you know, I got it. I got a house. I have my shelter. I have clean water. I have food. What's next? Oh, I don't know. Competition.
I hate adrenaline.
Wow. Do you really? I love it.
It gets me all like cranked up and I get all jumpy. And no, I like to just relax.
I love it, man. I like to go too fast on my motorcycle to get my adrenaline going. And then I like to just take turns too tight. Because I like to get my adrenaline going.
Yeah, I don't. I have an adverse effect to it. I don't know. It might have been.
Yeah, I love it.
It could have been combat that turned me off to it, and I couldn't shut it off for a while. Maybe it was that. But I learned to put that away, and I don't. I'm just too laid back now.
I mean, I feel like I'm pretty laid back too. But every now and again, I like to get my this afternoon. I took off, and I was
moving too fast. You were coming in. You never knew me before. You never knew the non-laid back Kevin Sullivan.
You told me about it.
Yeah. I used to be like type A, just always just intense and like I don't know, just a ball of vibrating energy. And then, I don't know, I just was like, I saw the light. I was like, what's the point of this?
Well, all the time, yeah. But every now and again, it's fun. I get adrenaline in the gym going back to when we talk about lifting weights. I do. I get pumped up and I'm like, hell yeah, I'm going to.
Now that you say that, when I used to fight, I liked it. That was the reason.
You get a little rush and then you're done. Then you come back to what's really important, which is just enjoying life.
Yeah.
That's what's really important.
My favorite thing about the fight game, I think, was it's real. What I mean by that is there's nobody that can get into a jiu-jitsu fight or knockdown karate fight or even sparring that can fake it. You can't fake it because you're going to get hurt. Yeah. And when you're in there mano a mano, it's just real. You know, if for that moment you are living because there's no bullshit. You take away all the wrapper and there you are. You're two people that have a skill set and you have to go head to head.
I agree. That's why I like when I used to wrestle. It was the same way.
Yeah.
And then the Marines, we had we called it MCMAP. Mm-hmm. MCMAP, the Marine Corps.
I think you were telling me about this.
Yeah, Marine Corps Mixed Martial Arts Program.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, Marine Corps Martial Arts Program, MCMAP. And they would do the same thing. You know, there was no ring. It was like all the guys in your platoon would form a circle, and then two guys would go in and fight, and then it was almost like Fight Club. And then they'd go out, and then two more guys would come in and fight. And then sometimes, you know, when you elevated your skill set, one guy would go in versus two guys.
Okay.
You know, and then if you're winning, they might throw a third guy in, or they might even it out and put a second guy in for you, you know, so that's 2-on-2. But they were always changing the dynamic.
Yeah.
Which is not mano a mano, right? But it's still, you're fighting and you're giving it your all.
So. Yeah. Well, grappling, was there a lot of grappling since it was the mixed martial art program?
Yeah, it was, but it wasn't like MMA that we're familiar with. A lot of it was, but it was also, you know, MMA, when you're just wearing your little shorts and nothing else, it's one thing. But the way we train, you know, you have your uniform on and you have a flak jacket on because you're going to wear that in combat.
So yeah.
It's designed to simulate hand-to-hand combat if you were ever in close quarters and you didn't have your weapon and you're actually fighting an enemy combatant, but you still have all your gear on because you're in war. So the moves are a little bit different.
And you can grab and stuff,
you can
right?
grab, you can do a lot
it's
of
like
crazy
judo.
Things.
Judo, you do a lot of grabbing.
Yeah, actually it's probably more similar to judo than anything. But but we are punching and you are doing kicks where you're kicking at the knees and kicking at the, you know, so.
I liked judo. I did a little judo. I liked the throws.
It's all fun, man. I mean, yeah. It's just fun. I enjoy it.
Yeah,
I don't
I miss it
anymore because I don't want to get hurt anymore.
Like, yeah, I'm a mess.
35 this year. I'm good.
Muscular skeletally, I'm a freaking. I picture like, I don't know. I'm just I've just banged myself up too much. Kind of sucks, but what are you gonna do? So now I do things like this. Now I just yap on a microphone.
Yeah.
Listen to me. I'm important.
There's something else I was going to bring up. Oh, and this is completely off the different direction here, but I was just reading. They were studying these monkeys, and they saw them doing a ritualistic behavior. So monkeys, if they're going to use a rock, it's to smash something, right? There's no reason to hold a rock unless it's to smash something. Or if they're going to use a stick, they use it to grab, like, ants. Have you ever seen the monkeys using them to grab ants?
Yeah.
Well, they found all these rocks in a like, hauled-out tree, and they're like, what the hell is this? And then they watched them doing it, and they would, like, go in there and just pile them up and then leave. There's no reason. So they're like, this is some sort of ritualistic behavior. So they think it's some sort of religious ceremony that they're doing.
That's
something
amazing.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
I love it. I think I would believe it because it's just the next step in the evolutionary chain of monkeys. Sure. Since we kind of evolved from them anyway, but I think that's pretty awesome.
Isn't that crazy?
It's so awesome. I'd love to know who their god is, because that'd be like, there's a whole new world religion.
They might,
from monkeys.
They might be able to convert me if they
me too,
because all the stuff that's going on around here, I'm like,
yeah, I'm with you.
I don't know. People put so much energy into their belief system and trying to get other people into that belief system. Whether it's politics, whether it's religion, whether it's, can be anything really.
Yeah, I agree. It's a mess. I think if we all focused on what's really important, and it's just people being good to people and people helping people.
Yeah.
None of it would matter. You just everyone be happy, help everyone else out.
Can you imagine waking up every day and be like, ah, today, dude, I got like 12 hours of writing signs because we're going to go and scream at people. are you really getting anything done, or you're just annoying people?
Well, and the thing generally too is that they're preaching to the choir. So, they do these rallies, and the people who show up are like-minded supporters. So it's like, well, yeah, like you're not really doing anything to... I don't know, man. I think it's stupid.
I think the last revolutionaries in America were back in 1776. Because, I mean, that's real revolution. These guys put their lives on the line. Yeah. And we talk about...
Probably the Civil War, too. 18, whatever that was. I can't...
1862 to 64, 60 to 64.
Like, I'm horrible with history, but yeah. I know it was mid-1800s. Mm-hmm. Because that was a pretty big...
Yeah, it was.
People really put their lives on the line for that one.
That was for
different types of freedoms.
Yeah.
And I mean, they wanted to start their own country.
Yeah.
Really.
They tried to break away, like
we broke away from England.
That's true. The Patriots, though, the originally founding fathers, it's just...
I agree.
How cool is it John Hancock wrote his name? People don't realize that signature, why it's so famous, is because when they wrote the Declaration of Independence, he took it and he wrote it large and clear as kind of like a, there's my fucking name, asshole.
Yeah.
You want to know who wrote this? It's me. Yeah. I'm standing up for my principles.
Yeah. No, I agree. It was definitely different because you were fighting... at that time, it was the sun never sets on the British Empire.
Yeah.
And it was true at that time. They were across the whole world. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you're standing up to a powerhouse.
Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty impressive. That's like, America during the Civil War wasn't quite the powerhouse. It is today, but.
When you were a kid, was there ever a time where you did something and you're like, I can't believe I just did that. There's no turning back now.
Oh, yeah. A bunch of times.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I punched. I won't say his name because I don't want to defame anyone. But this, my bully, his name was Mike.
Hey, me.
Yeah, his name was Mike, and man, he bullied me like there was no tomorrow. I was probably in fifth grade and just annoyed me, and I was taking it for like months. I wasn't really telling anyone, and then I knew I was like, I got to do something, and I was a short little fat kid, so. I didn't really know what to do. I wasn't going to fight back. And he knocked me down one day, and I just stood up and I swung and connected right in his face. And I was like, oh boy, that's it. What happens next? And I wonder if the revolution was like that. I mean, they had this colony over here. It was established, and then they probably, you know, they obviously did before the revolution. There was the, you know, all these like underground papers that were being circulated, and there was all this like we were passing around information, and then the Declaration of Independence, and they were probably like, oh, this is real now. We got two choices in the line of fire, or that's it.
It probably was less uh-oh and probably more empowering.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a big group of people. Well, you were kind of standing on your own. So I could imagine it would be like, oh, yeah. I mean, this could end very badly
for me. Yeah, that wasn't good for me.
For them, it was like a huge crew of people, and they knew they had other guys on their side, like fighters, war fighters. Not trained war fighters, but they had people who were willing to take up arms. So it's kind of like, I imagine it was extremely empowering when they signed their names to the Constitution.
They were young.
Like, you know what? This is it. We're going to make this happen.
They were young too. Like when I picture founding fathers, I picture like that old picture of Ben Franklin. But when this stuff was going on, they were
like, old.
Yeah,
he was like 80 when the
was he really?
Yeah, last year I read a couple biographies on Benjamin Franklin. I got real into him. So yeah, he was really old. He didn't live much past 1775.
Okay, I didn't know that.
He was very old. He was well established by the time the revolution rolled around.
Okay.
So getting his support was kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Because he was able to pull France.
Oh, was it?
Because he was well connected to France. So that's what France kind of aided.
There's a book out there called The Patriots. I can't remember who wrote it. That's all. I hear it's really good. And it goes into each one of the founding fathers. It gives a really good... I think it's a part of history that we know about. Like, the founding fathers, Declaration of Independence. But that was a pretty damn cool time. I mean, these guys they were principled. They were men.
I agree.
Right?
I want to learn more about a few of them. John Adams, I want to learn more about.
Sam Adams, too. He was more important than a lot of people realize.
He was. Thomas Jefferson is someone I really want to learn a lot more about. For a long time, I was like, Benjamin Franklin, because he was this great inventor, but Thomas Jefferson's done some pretty amazing things, too.
Yeah.
I don't know enough to talk about it, though. I need to read books.
Yeah, I don't know. I just know, like, yeah. Hey, if you want to read books, go to audibletrial.com /WWI podcast and get your free Audible 30-day trial with your free Audible book.
All right. That's your second ad.
That's it. Got that one in. Perfect. They, well, you've heard my spiel. You can listen. You can do all your workout. It's a good way to do things. Right. Didn't really hit that one over the fence, but yeah. What else? You got anything?
I don't know, man. What else is, what happened to aliens and teleporting ourselves and ghosts?
That stuff's still in my mind, pretty much at all times. In fact, if you go to my...
It's kind of the start of everything.
If you go to my Twitter, I've been Twittering lately. I got rid of Facebook and I've just been Twittering. Huh. The funny thing is, though, I have like an anonymous Twitter for political stuff because I love trolling, like, you know, those 20-something-year-old, like, what do they call them? Social justice warriors are like, totally, man, I can't believe you're eating a hamburger. Do you know how much water goes into a hamburger? And do you know how much water is needed for... It's like, shut up. Get out of my face. Let me eat my hamburger. But they... So I go in there. I just troll those people. And then I have my Twitter account, which is at WWI Podcast. And what I have pinned there is people get so hell-bent or so bent out of shape about, like, say, the elections or whatever is going on right now. And all people have to do is sit there and stop and be like, I'm this little squishy being, right? We're just a little being sitting on a rock hurtling through infinity. And no one knows why. If everyone just stopped and was like, yeah, that's pretty messed up when you think about it, you think everyone would start just getting along.
I would hope so.
Yeah, but that doesn't happen.
No, because we're too tied up to what you said earlier on. I think religion is a big problem.
Yeah.
Politics and religion is our biggest flaw, I think, as people.
Religion killed more people in the history of mankind than anything.
Almost all wars were fought for it.
Yeah.
Over religion or like land.
Except Genghis Khan. I don't think he was too religious. I think he just went around ruining things.
He was just like, I just want to mess things up.
He was, there's a, Dan Carlin has a podcast called Hardcore History. And It's really good. You want? It's almost like an audiobook. He did. He's got one on. It's called The Wrath of Khan, which isn't that like Star Trek? Yeah. But this is like, or maybe it's called Wrath of the Khans.
Yeah.
So he goes in depth about Genghis Khan and they would ride into a city. There were these. I want to say they were. I don't remember where these people. They might have been from Persia. They were going to meet with him because they're like, "Who's this guy that's just messing everything up in Asia?" And they were riding up a road and they noticed the road started getting gooey and wet and sloggy. And they're like, "It's not raining. What's going on?" And the road was greasy. They described it, and it was just piles of bodies. They were riding rotting bodies. They were riding over.
Wow.
Genghis Khan used to go out with 100,000. He had 100,000 in his army, and each one, they were master horsemen, every single one. It wasn't like you had the plebes over here and they just threw sticks and these guys. No, they were all basically special operators of the era, and they each had three horses with them. And so when they would charge a city, you would see 300,000 horses just you can imagine the sound just charging your walls. They had these longbows that were 165 pounds of whatever that's called, pull.
Yeah. I don't know, I'm not a.
And these guys were experts at it. So think about, like, you're riding a horse, you're holding on with your legs, and you're just one after the other, you're doing these 165-pound flies, basically. They must have just been massive. Ripped,
well,
massive.
Well, shit, they built the Wall of China to keep them out, didn't they?
Like, I think so.
Freaking huge.
I think so.
Wasn't that, I thought that's why they built
it. They had lots of walls. China was a very wally sort of place. But yeah, so they would pull those back. What was the other thing that blew my mind about them? They only had female horses because they could milk them when they got thirsty. They could, and if they weren't producing milk, they knew where to draw blood and they would drink their blood. These guys were just badass.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
They were as badass as it got.
Yeah, that is pretty bad.
He'd go into a town and he'd kill everyone, and then he'd be like, there's going to be a lot of people that want revenge here. So he would, one of them, he had like a wagon with the thing that the wagon hooks, the horses hook onto. Was that so much, like, let's say it was 3 feet. He made everyone in the town, every man in the town walk by it. If you were taller than it, they lopped your head off. If you charged in groups of five, so there were five guys or maybe 10 guys in a unit, almost like a platoon, I guess. How many is a platoon? 16?
No, 30 something.
30 something. Yeah. So it was smaller than that, maybe a squad.
Squad is about 13.
Okay. So let's say they had a squad of guys. Now, if one guy charged and nobody else did, they all got executed. If one guy retreated and no one else did, they all got executed. Like, everyone had to do something as a cohesive group or Genghis Khan would lop your head off.
God dang.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Well, yes.
Yeah. That's why they were so... He didn't have just... It wasn't just obedience of his troops. It was... I mean, they had no choice. It was 100% obedience. Your head was going to be lopped off.
I guess... What... Yeah, but it didn't last. You can't sustain that. I mean, after Genghis Khan, who was there? Did it die?
Kublai Khan, his son, right?
Oh, did he? I don't know. I don't really know the history.
He really put a hell of a... Like, I think... I don't remember how many... It's like his... Genghis Khan's DNA is in like some high percentage of every Asian right now.
Oh, yeah.
Asian and then all the way up until like Siberia. Yeah, he went all over the place. He was pretty badass. And it was... What I think is funny, too, is how we put time between... So let's say Genghis Khan did this last year. The world would still be in mourning, right? We'd be like, oh, my God, too soon. Don't talk about it. But you put... I think this happened a couple thousand years ago around the time. No, he was, it was like 1500s.
I don't know.
1400s.
I have no idea.
But you put that much time in there and then it's like, oh, all right, no big deal. Let's talk about it. Let's read about it.
Right.
You know, World War II happened and we don't like to talk about that Holocaust, but, at what point do people start, like, you can write a book right now about all the good things that came out of Genghis Khan, right? What type of, things he came up with and what type of, advancements in technology or military maneuvers. That would be like today writing, hey, here's all the good things that came out of Nazi Germany.
I think they, but yeah, but they do.
I don't think so. Be like, so this was Hitler's genius. And you're like, you know, he had these really good programs. It's like, no, I don't think really you can.
Who's the German, the general? We study him all the time.
Oh, Rommel?
Rommel.
Rommel was a good guy, though. He was a good guy versus, in history, he's not seen as, he was part of the plot to kill Hitler.
Maybe I'm confusing things then.
Rommel was a tank commander type of person. Or maybe he wasn't, but I always just picture him on a tank.
Because it's pretty badass.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. All right, man.
Well.
That was good talk.
No aliens. Yeah.
No aliens. We'll get into aliens again. They're out there. They're in our backyard.
I'm sure they're watching us right now.
So you got, when's your next podcast coming up?
Hopefully within a week or two.
Nice.
If I got to get back, I got to focus on them. I have two that are lined up right now.
Okay.
One is on the Dominican Republic. That's the one I'm going to push next.
Mm-hmm.
So it's on drinking traditions, culture, and that sort of stuff. So we talk about Dominican rum. We talk about Dominican beer.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about something called Mama Juana. Which
yeah, you're talking about that. Yeah,
Mama Juana, not marijuana, which is a, it goes back to the original Dominicans, which wasn't Dominican Republic at the time, but the native Indians pre-Columbus would make a drink called Mama Juana. And it was all these sticks and herbs and leaves and things like that that they'd put in like their tea. Post-Columbus, when they began distilling rum, they would put it in their rum.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of an aphrodisiac, or was thought to be an aphrodisiac, and would add these interesting complex flavors to the rum and all that stuff. So we'll talk a little bit about that sort of stuff. Not too much because I couldn't find an expert on it.
Yeah.
But I just talked to a few of the locals and then a couple guys who went on the trip with me and their experiences drinking and learning more about the culture and that sort of stuff. So it's more,
you know. International, man. You're showing international.
Did. And then the one after that, I don't know if you've been to the Museum of Life and Science in Durham.
No, but it sounds freaking awesome.
It is freaking awesome. And I linked up with them, and they do some really great adult programming.
That's right. Now I remember you were talking about this.
Yep. So I linked up with the head person who's doing that, and we talk about booze and adult education and how you can mix education and booze and science and create something really wonderful.
Nice. That'll be a cool one.
So that's going to be a good one.
Isn't it amazing? All you have to do is reach out. People will talk to you.
I know. It's amazing. It was like instant, like your podcast. Oh, it's instant credibility.
Yeah. Any idiot with a microphone, I think, can do this. And I got coming up on my show. I have Paul Bremer, who's supposed to be doing a show, but his wife is kind of sick right now. So it's hard to get him on. But he was the ambassador to Iraq. I'm trying to get him on soon, but more forthcoming is going to be, I have a guy, I want to say he's a med student, but he studies like non-traditional. So like on the side, he studies like DMT, dimethyltryptamine.
That's awesome.
Dimethyltryptamine.
That'd be a good show.
Ayahuasca, Ibogaine, something like that. I don't know much about it, but he goes on to these like psychedelics and how they're healing people, and it'll be a good show. I think
that's going to be awesome.
His is next. After him, I have this guy named Tom Bell. He's an archaeologist out of United Kingdom, and his claim to fame is he found this thing at a site. It looks like a guitar pick, really, with a little hole in the middle. So it was like a necklace or something. And it's the oldest known art. It's like from the Mesolithic era that they ever found in Great Britain. He looks like he's in his mid-20s, not that old. So that's kind of a cool thing. He's going to talk about that. I'm going to talk to him about have you ever seen the documentary Cave of Forgotten Dreams?
No.
I'm really into it. I watched it once and it just blew my mind. It's about these cave drawings they found that were 32,000 years old. I want to talk to him about that. And then,
it's on Netflix?
Yeah, I think it is. It might still be.
Cave of Forgotten Dreams.
Werner Herzog. He did the bear one, the grizzly man one. He's got like a really interesting voice. If you ever saw Grizzly Man, that's the guy who does him. He does really good documentaries. I'm going to have that guy on. And then who's coming on? Then this other guy I found. He's a like snowboarder, sports psychologist. Just adventurer. He's out in France right now, so I'm going to get him on and chat with him about some stuff.
Cool, man.
And then, of course, John Taylor, we're going to get back on, the Secret Service guy / author. So, yeah, we got some fun stuff coming up. And I've got like three of these that I haven't even published yet. So I'm going to try to get a lot of these done, and then I can take a little break and just publish them every 2 weeks.
There you go.
Yeah. But that's it. That was the Wait, What If podcast. You guys can find me on Twitter at WWI Podcast, or you can find me on Facebook, which is Facebook.com/WWI Podcast. Remember to check out waitwhatifpodcast.com/onit to get all your supplements and just all the cool stuff. It's one of my favorite websites. And you get 10% off if you shop there under my link. So that's all. Mike, you got any last comments?
No, except one thing, because I didn't get a chance to mention my situation. Yeah. Make It a Double.
Oh,
the
yeah.
name of the podcast that I have. So if you're interested in booze, spirits, history, mixology, and people and stories that make it all great, then maybe check it out if you're interested. I think it's a lot of fun.
And check it out. If you're listening to this right now, just press stop because this is over. Go and check that out. They can find that on iTunes, Stitcher, pretty much everything, right?
Yeah, it's on the same stuff, I think, more or less. The big ones, iTunes, Stitcher, and Podbean.
Okay. And it's at your website, Make It a Double. No, DoublePodcast.com.
DoublePodcast.com. I've been lazy about that. But if you search on Facebook, it's a bit more active there. It's Make It a Double. And it's the podcast on Facebook.
Okay. Thanks. Peace.
Like us on Facebook.com/WWI Podcast and at WWI Podcast on Twitter. Drop us a line at WaitWhatIfPodcast@yahoo.com. Listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn Internet Radio. Enjoyed your listening experience. Now go forth and expand your reality.